So for those of you tuning in, Jacqueline is a dear friend. We had her on the podcast a couple years ago. We mostly talked about Create and Cultivate and how she launched that company, but she's not one to ever stop. So recently starting New Money Ventures, and then, as if she wasn't busy enough, a wine company, which I'm excited to get into. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Always good to be back.
All right. Let's go back to the decision that, you know, you were ready to sort of take on more. You have at Create and Cultivate created this incredible cult-like following, incredible events, incredible, you know, activations. What made you say, all right, next?
Yeah. So, you know, Create and Cultivate, it's funny because like a lot of people think, you know, it's only been around since like 2017, 2018, but it's actually been around since 2011. So it's a really long time. And for me, you know, where we were at as a business, we were completely self-funded, growing extremely fast, doing extremely well. And, you know, we were sort of like, what's that next chapter look like for the business? You know, there feels like there's so much opportunity here to really grow and build beyond just what we've been doing for the, you know, the last 10 plus years. And so, you know, the irony of it all is like, you know, we were ending 2019, our biggest and best year ever, Q1 2020, our biggest and best quarter ever. And then of course, like, you know, the pandemic hit, which shifted everyone's world and especially ours. And so that was really, you know, a trying time for us and a time for like reinvention. And I think for me personally, I'm really proud of the way we sort of navigated that moment in time. You know, we were able to come out on top, despite running an events company in a global pandemic. And so after that, you know, the world really changed and, you know, the way we consume media changed, the way people attended events obviously changed, the way so much had changed. And I think I was at that moment thinking, you know, there needs to be a sort of new energy at the helm of Create and Cultivate to take it into this next new normal. And so at that point, you know, we were lucky in that we were majority acquired by private equity, which was a great exit for the business. You know, they doubled down and invested in it, which is awesome for the first time, you know, having capital. And we're able to bring on an incredible new CEO in Kate Spees. So was super excited about this sort of natural evolution of the business and myself. And obviously I'm still super involved and part of the company, just in a different role.
Was that hard to adapt to like your baby and now it's acquired and now you have a different role, or were you ready?
I think it's sort of bittersweet is like the way I would put it. I think it's very, very weird to wake up after 10 years of doing the exact same thing to not do that exact same thing anymore. It's a very jarring feeling, especially as I'm sure you know very well, when your identity is so tied to the business. I think where I'm at now is I feel really good about it. You know, I feel like the role I'm playing is the right role for me. I think, you know, my input is valuable, but it's not the be all say all. And it's nice to kind of see this next evolution of the brand kind of come to life with this new team, you know, what they're interested in, what they're seeing the audience be interested in. You know, so much has changed since, you know, even the last like 2-3 years. So for me, I would say it's definitely bittersweet, but I'm happy I'm still, you know, part of the company in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. I feel like I recently have had things where either meetings I used to be in or weighed in on, you know, were had without me, or decisions were made. And I was like, oh, I used to weigh in on that. That's weird. And it's definitely a mind fuck to go from like, oh, wait, that's not my job anymore, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's so strange. And like seeing things get announced that you maybe didn't know about, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's a very weird experience, but it's also, it feels right to me. Like I feel like it was the right timing. It was the right move. It's time for a new generation of what's to come. And I think also I was ready for a change. Like I was ready for a new challenge, you know, being, you know, excited about a new possibility. You know, it's an interesting feeling for sure that I know you can relate to.
Totally. It's something you always dream of, and then it happens. And then you're like, wait, that's weird. I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah.
So how long did you wait before you went off to New Money Ventures and started that? And did you know that's what you wanted to do? And what is it for those tuning in?
Yeah, totally. So I had been angel investing in female-led businesses, you know, since 2013, probably. And I absolutely love it. Obviously, I get, you know, to meet so many incredible female entrepreneurs. I get to give insights into their business. You know, I obviously love connecting people. And it's just been really, really rewarding. So I knew post Create and Cultivate, I wanted to keep in the investing space specifically for women. You know, the reason for that was because of a few different things. One, at every Create and Cultivate, and now probably at every conference you ever go to, you always hear the stats that only 2% of VC funding goes to female entrepreneurs, even less for women of color. It's an extremely jarring stat, and it's sort of just become this like, yep, that's what it is. And it's really sad when you start to think about how many amazing female-owned businesses are out there, how much money is out there, and that only 2% is going to female-led companies. And the other stat I found really interesting was that only 5% of venture capital firms are run by women, have women in the capital deploying seat. So when you start to think about it, it kind of makes sense in a lot of ways, you know, given that venture capital investing, that entire business is based around deal flow, you know, getting those deals in your inbox through a friend, whatever it might be. And usually, you know, your inbox and your deal flow looks a lot like the people around you. You know, my deal flow is a lot of female entrepreneurs, you know, by nature of me being the founder of Create and Cultivate and just, you know, a fellow female entrepreneur. And when you think about what the majority of venture capital looks like, which is like older white men, assumably their inbox and their circle looks a lot like them. So the problem is pretty brutal. It's pretty widespread. And so for me, I was like, I really want to flip that on its head and really change the narrative because I've just heard about it for so long and it doesn't feel like, you know, a lot has really changed. Even, you know, in the past couple of years, I think it's actually gone below 2%, which is not great. So I wanted to start a fund. You know, I knew my, you know, sort of mission statement around it was to invest in female entrepreneurs, but was kind of excited to go out there and, you know, kind of figure out what I'm excited about, like what works for me. And so launched the fund in January of last year. It's called New Money Ventures. It's a $20 million consumer fund focused on funding the next generation of female-led, female-run businesses. We've made, I want to say over at least 6 investments to date in different categories, food and bev, you know, fitness, you know, you name it. We're kind of all over the place. We really invest in founders and founders' visions, and in categories we feel are disruptive. And it's been a wild ride. It's been really interesting to become a venture capitalist and having never raised money or had to like do anything in the venture space. But it's a really amazing place to be because it just is such a natural evolution of my work at Create and Cultivate. And now I get to put my, you know, money where my mouth is.
So I know the answers to this, but I'm curious, you know, for my listeners, when you get 20 million and people are like, wait, was that money that was hers? Or how did this fund come to be? And, you know, I feel like today everybody, I was on the phone advising someone today and she's like, will you invest in my company? And I was like, you don't even need to raise any money. What is wrong with you? So like what, I guess my 2 questions are, where did this money come from? And then how do you, you know, since you've been doing it now for a while, you know, how do you advise companies on when they should actually get an investment and when it's actually the wrong thing to do?
Totally. So basically, when you have a fund, it's usually not your own personal money. It can be sometimes. I mean, there's a million different ways to structure it. But usually what you do is you create your fund, you create your fund thesis. You obviously have some sort of unique value in the market that's going to get people excited to invest with you. And essentially, you go out and you have to go raise $20 million. So you basically go out and you, you know, get LPs, which are limited partners that will invest in the fund, put their own capital into it to then go out and invest in companies for hopes of a return. And, you know, that can be high net worth individuals, it can be institutions, it can be a ton of different things. So we have a singular LP. She's a self-made female billionaire. She's amazing. I got to meet her through Create and Cultivate. It kind of happened randomly, you know, through our conversations. She's a huge advocate of female run businesses. And so it kind of was like a 1+1=3 for us. And, you know, it was a great way to kind of kickstart the fund. But when you're running a fund, like you're constantly fundraising. So, you know, you're looking at your next fund and how you're sort of going to create more capital for that. You're looking at your current investments and what kind of return they're making for your LPs. Like, you know, you essentially have bosses at the end of the day. You know, it's about making their money exponentially grow in bigger ways. So that's like the back end part of it, right? Of where that capital is going. And then where you deploy that capital is really a mandate of the fund. So for us, you know, our, you know, primary investments were focused on food and beverage, then beauty, and now we're really focused on creator economy. And those things change as the market changes. But the companies that, you know, again, I'm sure you get pitched 1,000 times a day, and so do I as both an angel investor and now a venture capitalist, like venture is a very specific type of money that you're taking on. There's a million different ways to get money. There's loans, there's Kickstarters, there's angel investments, strategic investment, there's accelerators, whatever. Like there's 1,000 different ways to get money. And all that money comes with a different set of responsibilities and expectations. And I always like to tell people that because I think there's become, you know, so much hype around venture that everyone thinks they need to raise money for their business, but that's not necessarily the case. Companies that need venture are companies that are looking to exponentially scale and grow their business, really beyond their wildest dreams. Like that is really where venture lies. And it's for companies that without cash probably couldn't exist. So a good example I always like to use is like a rent the runway business, right? Thinking about that company, you're like, I want to rent designer clothing to millions of people and dry clean them weekly and ship them out. Like that is an expensive business that without sizable capital probably cannot exist. And then there's companies that, you know, maybe don't need a lot of cash. And you know, an example of that is Create and Cultivate, right? Like we self-funded because we were making money. We reinvested money back into the business. That being said, could our growth have, exponentially skyrocketed had we, you know, raised a few million dollars? Of course. But it depends on the type of business that you're wanting to build and what your expectation is for exit. And I think getting really clear on that is important. And there's no wrong answer. And I think that's really important as well, is that you don't have to have $1 million exit or $1 billion exit to be a successful entrepreneur. You can have a company that breaks even every year where you're happy, you're working hours, you want to work, you're able to take home a paycheck you're proud of, and you can have that business for 30 years, and that's a success. So I like to kind of dispel a lot of the venture, you know, kind of narrative and myths and kind of give people this real story of like what money can do for you and what money can't do for you. Because the expectation of venture, once you open that door, it is very rare for people to raise one round. Like, and if they do, good for them. You know, I think that's a very disciplined entrepreneur who had a very specific plan. But the reality is your life becomes raising money. And then your whole goal of your business is to make as much cash as possible. And in those situations, you can lose sight of a lot of things that maybe you were really excited about when you first started your business.
I'm so happy you explained it that way, because I think there's so many people who are just like, oh, I'm starting a business, I need to raise VC. And I'm always the naysayer, like, no, you get to do it on a credit card, and then you get to mortgage your house, then you get to do some angels and yeah. Have some Tupperware parties and find product market fit. And then maybe, you know, maybe venture or private equity is right for you when you have like growth and scale. And
exactly.
And people don't want to hear that. They just want like the check, and they think their problems are going to go away. But guess what? We know they don't.
Yes, they definitely do not. It's kind of become an interesting game. And I think also like venture has really changed too. You know, I think we were in a real churn and burn society for probably 5 years, you know, where growth at all costs, you know, as much cash as possible, you know, was the metric of success. And I think that's just changed over time. And it's not what founders want anymore. It's not what employees want anymore. It's not what the market really wants. So it's an interesting time for sure.
So let's talk about that change, because when we were raising money through private equity, that was the game, grow at all costs. become as big as humanly possible and then exit. And then midstream, that sentiment changed. And it was like, are you profitable? And we were like, no, we didn't know that was the goal. And it was like, oh yeah, yeah, you got to be profitable. And we're like, cool. We'll see you in 5 years. It's going to take us 5 years to figure that shit out. So talk me through how you've seen this change for the companies you've invested in, and like, what do they have to do to sort of figure that out?
Yep, that's exactly right. So as mentioned, like that was the philosophy around venture for many, many, many years. Growth at all costs, what is profitability, was not even mentioned or uttered. It was really just about acquire as many customers as possible, grow as much revenue as possible. And during that time period, acquiring customers was really easy. It was cheap. It was easy. Meta really owned that. You know, everyone's budgets were there. They were able to get customers like super cheap and then retain those customers. Essentially, a couple years ago, the iOS update really messed with that algorithm that everyone had really mastered. And acquiring customers became really hard and really expensive. And so that piece of the puzzle fell apart, where people had to start thinking of new ways to acquire customers, allocate dollars in different ways, spend more money on acquiring customers. And it kind of tipped the scales. Coupled with that was employees basically being like, we don't want to work 150-hour weeks, and we don't want to be part of this hustle culture. And, you know, we're looking at the CEO of this company and like, we have no aspiration to be that person, because that person is like in the office, 24 hours a week, burning themselves out. And, you know, COVID really redirected what life was like as an employee and a CEO and all this thing. So, all of those things created the perfect storm of, you know, a global pandemic, now a recession, you know, the great resignation, all of these things combined.
Quiet quitting.
Yeah. Quiet quitting, you know, all these like things like completely, basically they threw the entire truck in reverse and we're like, no, like we need to get back to basics and start building profitable companies, that, you know, slow growth, being smart, being scrappy, turning off that, you know, $1 million a month in paid marketing, and, you know, start reaching out to your customers, you know, through other means. So it's a massive shift. And to your point, people who were in that game, who were raising that kind of capital, they have to completely restructure and redo the way that they do business. And that's extremely hard to do when you have grown so quickly in one way. So I think that's really challenging for those types of companies. And, you know, we've seen now a lot of down rounds and flat valuations and people having to come to grips with like, it isn't what it was 5 years ago. And on the flip side, you know, everyone who's raising now is thinking that they're in that, you know, money's easy to get and, you know, grow at all costs. And like a lot of this, you know, raise is going toward marketing, and like venture capitalists aren't having that now. You know, so it is a massive seismic shift in venture that I'm sure is going to have major repercussions down the line.
I'm curious to see how this next batch of people getting investments deal with it, because it was what you were describing for so long. And it's obviously the right time for this shift, but it's not an easy thing to stomach. But okay, so you do this. This is mostly up until recently your full-time gig. And then you said, I love wine. What happened?
I love it. Yeah. I mean, look, here's the deal. I love wine. The global pandemic, I mean, literally, I think we all just drank a lot of wine. That's the reality of the situation. I drank a little too much wine. And, you know, what was interesting is that I joined all these like wine clubs during COVID and was just kind of like meh about the delivery and the experience. Like, wasn't anything too exciting. It was pretty pricey. And I also just found myself, you know, kind of coming out of the pandemic, opening a bottle of wine, having a glass, and then putting it in my fridge. And then like 5 days later, finding it, forgetting about it, using it to cook with. And these were expensive bottles of wine. And I was like, God, like, I wonder if other people have this issue. And so I started talking to my girlfriends about it. And everyone's like, I do the exact same thing. Like, my husband drinks red, I drink white. We open two bottles, they sit in the fridge, we end up cooking with them, we throw them out, you know, we join all these wine clubs. Like, it was a very similar experience. And so I got really excited to look into the single serve market of wine and looked into investing in that. And what I found was one is like either companies were way too far along and our fund couldn't make a dent in terms of, you know, investing, or two, it was all canned wine, which, you know, has its place, obviously, as an event person, like makes sense to have canned wine, like, you know, all of those different things. But I couldn't really find a good luxe single serve wine that was really delicious, that wasn't in a can, that had a really cool brand behind it. Like, I just was struggling to find it. And so I kind of got excited about maybe building this brand. And part of the fund of New Money Ventures is that we have a brand atelier, meaning if we can't find something that we want to invest in that we think is going to disrupt the market, we can invest in our own businesses and build our own brands. And so May was the first brand out of that brand sort of incubator, if you will. And what we found was a really amazing facility near Napa that had these glass bottles that were mini, that were really cute, really fun, really stylish. And we found a female winemaker, you know, and basically got to work on building the brand May. Parallel path to that, you know, I had been studying to become a sommelier with a friend of mine for, you know, a couple years. We started during COVID and kept going post-COVID. And I just am so fascinated by the business. You know, I think it's so fun to kind of know the nuances. It's, you know, obviously such an old and historic, you know, industry, to really understand how it all works on the back end and on the front end, which is super fun. And so May was born, and, you know, the way we sort of think of it is May is made for moderation. It's a single serve bottle of wine, or a glass of wine by the bottle, a little oversized glass where you can open a nice glass bottle, have a glass, and you're one and done, and you don't have to think about it again. And there's no regrets, right, in terms of like opening a nice bottle, letting it sit there, or feeling guilty and drinking the whole thing, which we've all been there. So it's been a really fun brand to build, and lots of really good learnings along the way.
What have you learned? Because I've spoken to, I have friends in the alcohol community, and I hear the range of, oh my God, we're making so much money, to this is a passion project.
Yep.
And it allows me to live on my farm. So like, what were some of the biggest shocks that you encountered?
So basically, the thing about alcohol is a lot of the back end logistics. So what's wild about the industry is that a lot of it is still run by prohibition era laws. So there's certain states you can't ship to, there's certain states you can't sell in, there's a lot of disclosures when it comes to labeling. Labeling is a huge thing in wine industry, and if you get it wrong, like, you can have your whole operation shut down. It's pretty wild. What I will say about the alcohol industry is it's extremely hard to do solely direct to consumer because the shipping costs are really high. Oftentimes it's more expensive to ship the product than it is to actually have the product. You know, the shipping is really, really hard. You have to ship it quickly because obviously there's, you know, you can't have it sitting out in hot heat. You can't, you know, have it on a truck for 5 days. So you have to do expedited shipping. There's obviously, you have to have everything signed for because it's the 21 plus thing, which is more expensive. And then obviously you miss people, and then there's reshipping fees. There's a lot of nuance when it comes to that side of things. For us, you know, where we really see the value and the excitement is, and the profitability is in the larger packs. So the 12 packs, the 9 packs, you know, that's when you really start to hit, you know, those margins and start seeing that, you know, profitability there. So that's great. So basically that's where we were focused. Stage one of May, where we launched and have been extremely successful, which is awesome. And now stage two will be doing more retail focused inclusion. So retail is, you know, obviously you need to get the brand in a good place and get retailers excited about carrying your brand, get that momentum. And then going into retail is when you're able to really start to see the profitability grow in a bigger way, because obviously you're getting more mass market. The reality is like majority of consumers still buy wine at grocery stores, buy wine at, you know, bodegas or wherever, you know, their wine shop. Direct to consumer has not, I would say, hit the mainstream as much as it has in other categories, but it is growing exponentially year over year. But there's still a lot of work to be done there. So it's interesting. I mean, for me, this is my first product business, which has been a crazy learning. So many different things that go into it. So I think for me, it's just been exciting to kind of learn about the business, the profit margins, all those things that I'm, you know, so well, you know, the fulfillment, the shipping, the supply chain, it's a lot. But for us, you know, we've had a really good, you know, we launched, I think, almost 3 months ago. So it's been a really fun time.
Was it quite a change going from a person-based business to product?
Yeah, it's totally different. It's a whole other beast. The thing that was interesting with Create and Cultivate is like, it was and is completely community driven. Like, we rarely did paid marketing. Like, I think probably in the lifetime of the company, we spent less than $30,000 on paid marketing. It was not a thing. Like, we were all organic, all community, all word of mouth. And like, that, it probably was a lot easier to do that when we were, you know, starting out. So going into a game where everything is CAC to LTV and like, how much are you spending? What, you know, you're acquiring these users, what are your ads? Like, it's a different world for me. And, you know, I'm lucky I have an amazing team that, you know, is so great at those things. So I personally, it's been a major learning curve, but it's been really fun, to kind of see the other side of things and how it all works.
What was your biggest mistake you've made so far with, because you just didn't know?
I would say, so the biggest mistake, and I mean, it was, I would say it's more of a learning now, but it's like, oh, right. Like, these things can happen. So we wanted to launch with sparkling, you know, champagne-esque sparkling wine, which is my favorite. It's hugely popular amongst millennial drinkers. And so we bought a bunch of sparkling wine and we went to bottle it, and we could not get the bottles we got and the lids we got were not sealing properly. And it was just like something where I was like, of course it's going to work, you know, like, we'll figure it out. And we couldn't get it done in time for launch. And so we had to pivot and change. And that's the thing about product, right? Is like, you don't know what you don't know until you ship. And like, that's like, oh man, like, these are not sealing properly. We have to go find an entirely new machine to figure this out. And just sort of weighing those, you know, variables of what it takes to run a product business.
And so, do you feel like your ability to have resilience and regroup because you've had other businesses before was easier the second time?
Yes, of course. I mean, I think for me, I think like a good CEO or a good characteristic of CEO is being able to make extremely difficult situations quickly, you know, being able to see the full picture. And I think with this one, you know, whereas like, if this was my first business and that had happened, I probably would have had a complete and total meltdown. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it becomes easier to say, okay, like, this is that cost. We'll put this aside. We'll find something new. We'll launch with this. Like, you're able to make those really difficult decisions quickly and with less emotion tied to it, because you start to realize, you just, you know, you earn your stripes, you get better at it, and you understand like, oh, these things are par for the course in building a business.
So where do you get your energy from? Because since the moment I met you, you have this energy, this effervescence, this just go, go, go. And I'm curious, can you bottle that as your next
business? Yes. I mean, I wish. I think for me is like, I get so much worth and, you know, pleasure and excitement and energy from working. Like, I genuinely love building businesses, helping people build businesses, growing companies. I absolutely love it, because I just think, you know, for me, it was really challenging. Like, you know, and you're the same, like, we were early days in like the female entrepreneurship, you know, side of things. You know, now it's totally different. You know, there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of support out there, but that didn't really exist. And for at least me, and I feel like you probably had a similar experience. Like, and so now being able to see it happen and being able to help women build businesses they love, build wealth around themselves, grow their, you know, money in a way that, you know, you could only dream of 10 years ago. You know, it's important to me, because I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, men do this all the time, you know, and they've been doing it for years and helping each other out. And so for us, I think it's just a really exciting time to be a female entrepreneur, female small business owner, female side hustler, whatever it is. You have the support, you have the tools, and you have the resources. So for me, I just get like real jazzed about that.
And how does your husband feel about everything you're jazzed about?
He's exhausted, I would probably say. No, it's actually been a really amazing ride. You know, I think he's like number one supporter, you know, and he's been able to see it like a front row seat of like the crazy things that we've gone through and, you know, all the good, all the bad, all the ugly. But, you know, it's amazing to have someone, you know, have your back in that way.
Totally. So what's next? If there is a next, or you're just like, hold on, I got two gigs going. Please, Lord, let those just be what you work on.
Yeah. So I think for now I'm good. I don't think I'm going to start a third or fourth or fifth business anytime soon. I'm really just excited to keep investing this year, advising, you know, I really, really love, you know, being able to take part in mentorship and all those things. So for me, I'm really on that. That's my focus this year, you know, investing and doubling down on that.
And coming out of this last two businesses that you've started, what is some new advice you'd love to share?
I think, honestly, there's never been a better time to start a business. Every single tool is available at your disposal, whether it's Shopify, getting a site up quickly, you know, all these amazing automation tools that like did not exist when I was launching. And so I think just get out there and launch your business, but don't rely on capital. Build a business that disrupts an industry that you're passionate about, that you see a hole in the market for, and go after it as scrappily as possible, and then go after the money, raising capital, whatever. But I think it's just more important than ever to build a passion-driven business, because I think a lot of people are just building businesses based on what they're seeing out there. And it's the same thing with crypto, right? It's like everyone said, invest in crypto, everyone did it. But like really thinking about what you're passionate about, what your expertise is, and what you can bring to the world that is new and different.
I love that. And I would encourage everyone listening, you don't need money to start a business. You need a little bit of money, but you can usually get that. It's not as much as anyone thinks it is. I'll just say that.
Exactly.
I started my business with $10,000 and I didn't need $10,000 to start my business. I thought I did, but I wasted it on a photo shoot. So let me tell you, it could have been started for less.
So true. It's so, so true. I know I always say I started Crate and Cultivate with a laptop and an idea. I'm like, that was it.
Totally. I think it's just being resourceful, scrappy, like you said, and, you know, not making sometimes the obvious choice. So where can people follow you, find you, ask you for money, buy your wine?
I love it. Yeah. So I am at Jacqueline R. Johnson on pretty much every platform. And you can follow at Drink May, MAIE, across all the different platforms as well. Drinkmay.com if you want to buy some wine, which would be awesome. And newmoneyventures.co. And you could submit there if you are looking to raise money.
Awesome. Well, as always, I'm in awe of you, of everything you continue to create. And let me just say, you're like a branding machine, because everything you touch, I'm like, oh my God, I have to have it because it's so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I mean, look, it's so fun. It's like my favorite part of the job.
Ugh. Well, when I come to you with my next idea, I'm gonna.
I'm ready. I am so, so, so down. So just let me know.
Okay. Well, thank you again. And I can't wait to see your face. And in a couple weeks, I'll be toasting to my baby with your gorgeous new beverage.
Yes, I'll have it delivered to the hospital room.
I've already told my friends, I'm like, you will bring me something bubbly to celebrate, please, after 10 months of nothing.
Well, early congratulations on that, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Minkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.